Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. The House Finance Committee may vote on its version of the state budget at a hearing scheduled for this afternoon. Lawmakers are considering an $8.2 billion spending proposal from Governor Lincoln Chafee. It includes a reduction in the corporate tax rate and an increase for public schools. But state revenue has been lower than anticipated, which means lawmakers must make cuts. Former State Administration Director Gary Sass says they shouldn't touch school aid or other help for cities and towns.
There are communities that are depending upon that money to balance their budget. The tax rates have been set. So I think that needs to receive the highest priority.
The General Assembly is also considering proposals to restructure the State Economic Development Agency. Chafee's budget includes $2.5 million to start paying back bonds owed over the failure of video game maker 38 Studios. Some lawmakers think the state shouldn't pay back that money. Moody's Investor Service has downgraded Rhode Island's bonds for its failed deal with 38 Studios. As Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis reports, Moody's has put those and other state bonds under review for possible additional downgrades.
In explaining the move, Moody's points to uncertainty in the General Assembly about whether to allocate money for paying back the 38 Studios bonds. The Investor Service downgraded the 38 Studios bonds from a low credit risk to a moderate risk. Governor Lincoln Chafee included $2.5 million in his budget as an initial installment on roughly $90 million owed in bonds for the failed video game company. In a statement, the governor says he's confident the state will, quote, continue to honor its obligations. Moody's is less optimistic. It says Rhode Island's uncertainty about paying back bondholders makes the Investor Service question its confidence in the full faith and credit of the state. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Tonight, the public has a chance to comment before the state's Public Utilities Commission on a proposed rate hike by the Providence Water Supply Board. The city supplies water to nearly 60% of the state by selling water wholesale to customers like cities in Warwick, East Providence, and the Kent County and Bristol County Water Authorities. Providence wants to raise rates by 32%. Boyce Spinelli is the board's general manager, and he says he's met with wholesalers and reminded them this was the first increase in 4 years.
Nobody likes a rate increase, but we really don't have a choice now. And I do realize that if there's an increase, they do have to pass it on to their customers.
Providence residents would see their water bills go up by 24%. Tonight's PUC hearing is at 6 o'clock at the Providence Public Safety Complex.
Hustling back in is Boland. Threw one across, shot, score!
The Bruins' Patrice Bergeron scores in the second period of Boston's 2-0 win in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Daniel Pye also scored, and the Bruins blocked 28 Chicago attempts at goal to move closer to a championship. Game 4 is tomorrow night in Boston.
Dr. Jody Rich is an infectious disease specialist at the Miriam Hospital in Providence. He sees a lot of patients with HIV and hepatitis C. Many also struggle with addiction to opiates, painkillers like OxyContin and Percocet. Before heading into his clinic, Rich takes a moment in his office, piled high with papers and folders, to explain why.
Now, when somebody uses opiates regularly, even in a matter of a few weeks, they can start to develop tolerance, which means they need a higher dose to get the same effect.
He says he hears this story all the time. Someone gets injured, a doctor prescribes some painkillers. The pills work. In fact, they work really well at first.
They like the feeling, and then pretty soon they notice that they need more and more. They start buying them from other people or, you know, searching through medicine cabinets, and then they realize if they stop, they start going into withdrawal. Now, I've talked to many people about what withdrawal feels like, and you can imagine your worst flu you've ever had, the most miserable you've ever had, ever been, it's 10 times worse than that.
He says that in the throes of addiction, people will do almost anything to get more pills, and that can be pretty easy. If one doctor stops refilling a prescription, addicts might shop around for one who will, or several. Until recently, it would have been pretty tough to detect, but now most states have some kind of online database where doctors can look up all of a patient's prescriptions in one place. Rhode Island's prescription monitoring program went live last October, but so far, the Department of Health says only about 15% of physicians and other prescribers are registered to use it. And Jody Rich is one of them.
Start a new request
In the time it takes me to tell you that Rich has turned to his computer, pulled up a website, and logged in, he's demonstrated how the prescription monitoring program works.
History. So there, it's a PDF. I open it, and bingo. This gives the patient's name.
Rich says it's easy to use and useful. Just the other day, he says, he discovered a patient who was filling opiate prescriptions from more than one doctor and most likely abusing the drug. Rich might confront the patient, but whether that patient will acknowledge the problem and get treatment is hard to say. If he doesn't, the patient could end up a statistic.
We have 4 to 6 people dying every week in this state of opiate overdose. It's really, it's in epidemic proportions.
Tom Clark is a researcher with the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Center for Excellence at Brandeis University.
There is some preliminary evidence that prescription monitoring programs are helping to reduce overdose deaths.
He says researchers need a lot more data to draw solid conclusions, but he thinks these programs are playing another important role.
First of all, it's the only way we can really track the problem in terms of doctor shopping. It's the only way we can track prescribing patterns of prescribers.
State health officials should be able to investigate doctors who prescribe inappropriately, but doctors should be able to look up what other providers are prescribing their patients, Clark says. That's where a prescription monitoring program comes in.
It can alert doctors to possible addiction and abuse of controlled substances.
But to be most effective, Clark says the program should have some basic functionality.
Do you want good, accurate data? Do you want the data to be analyzed proactively such that the information you get is timely and then you output that information to the users that need to see the information?
But the problem is that not every doctor who prescribes opiates uses a prescription monitoring program. And not every program analyzes data proactively, looking for troubling patterns in the data. Clark says programs in some states, like Kentucky and Oklahoma, are ahead of the curve, sending out automatic reports to doctors when they spot possible trouble. But then again, Clark says, you have to get doctors to use the program.
And the way to do that, of course, is you have to go out and pitch it to doctors and make it known. And that takes a good deal of work. It takes manpower, and it's time-consuming.
So, good, timely data, automatic reports, lots of doctors on board. Those are the best practices, according to Clark and fellow researchers at Brandeis. Rhode Island's program isn't measuring up to those standards yet, although it's not even a year old. Rhode Island's Board of Pharmacy Chief Catherine Cordy says doctors can at least look up a patient's prescriptions if they decide to.
They are able to notify us if there's a patient that they have some concern about. They can set up an alert or a notification to the Department of Health, and we would follow through on that. At this point, there is nothing proactively that we do to assist practitioners with individual patients who may be concerned.
She says the Department of Health would like the system to be able to analyze the data proactively for troubling patterns and send unsolicited reports to doctors. It would be great, she says, if it could scan for patients who receive opiate prescriptions from 5 or more doctors and who frequent several pharmacies, which might be an indication that they're abusing the drug. But that will take funding and human resources. So will integrating prescription monitoring programs with other medical records, says Health Department head Michael Fine.
There's always the hope of bringing the entire electronic environment together in a way that simplifies workflow for physicians and other providers, because we have created an environment that causes more work and more stress on practitioners because of the complexity of the electronic environment.
Fine says physicians and other healthcare professionals who prescribe drugs are beginning to feel more at home in that electronic environment. And he and other Department of Health officials have been meeting with doctors and community members to try to increase awareness about the prescription monitoring program. But he says curbing drug abuse will take more than electronics. The way doctors manage their patients' pain has to change.
Part of the reason that we get into this pickle is primary care physicians, when asked to help with somebody's chronic pain, have relatively few alternatives open to them and want to be able to take care of the human being.
Alternative therapies like acupuncture or physical therapy might help over time, but opiates work well and they work fast. And Fine says doctors want satisfied patients.
About 15 years ago, we widely adopted an approach that said pain was a vital sign, and physicians were judged, emergency rooms and hospitals were judged on the extent to which people's pain had been well addressed.
So opiate prescriptions have soared, but not every doctor understands how to prescribe them safely. Jim McDonald heads Rhode Island's Board of Medical Licensure and Discipline. He's the one doctors find themselves in front of if they're investigated for misconduct, say, allowing a patient too many pills at a time or refilling prescriptions too frequently.
When you ask how do doctors get to a place where they get in trouble, they get there very slowly, and I find they drift there. And the majority of them, when I sit down with them representing the medical board, recognize this got out of control.
But there's something else you might not realize is happening.
Doctors feel bullied by patients or pressured by patients.
Or, McDonald says, they're swayed by a patient's pleading.
And they often don't know that a patient might be pulling one over on them. That's where something like prescription monitoring program can be very helpful. But if you find something aberrant behavior-wise, you have to deal with it then and there.
But not every doctor has been trained in how to deal with addiction or how to confront patients. They might have access to a patient's prescription history through the monitoring program, but that doesn't mean they know what to do with it. And that's one thing infectious disease and addiction specialist Dr. Jody Rich worries about.
A clinician will get upset with that patient and accuse them of lying and being deceitful, and it would lead to an erosion of the physician-patient relationship. Unfortunately, that's part of the disease of addiction.
A prescription monitoring program can alert a doctor that a patient is doctor shopping. It can help a doctor decide to cut a patient off, but it can't necessarily solve the problem. An addict might turn to buying pills on the street, stealing them, or switch to heroin, which gives a similar high. But proponents of prescription monitoring programs say that at least they provide some basic data, a starting place for having those conversations with patients who might be in trouble. Officials in charge of Rhode Island's programs say their next steps are to try to get more doctors to use it, and they're hopeful new legislation will lead to tracking even more classes of addictive drugs. Kristen Gourlay, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Healthcare reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.